Luke is the only gospel that has that parable, the parable that we know as the Good Samaritan, in it. Luke provides us with many gems that don't exist in the other gospels. So every 3 years we get the Good Samaritan. Very often the emphasis that preachers put on the story or the parable of the Good Samaritan is one of compassion. And that's okay to some extent, I think. It's incomplete. The Good Samaritan parable is the quintessential Christian parable. It has so much in it. There is something in it for everybody. And if we want to go back and unpluck it a little bit, we need to look at the characters that are in it. Because once we understand the characters and their role and the symbols that they use or don't use, we start to get the fuller picture, which is much, much bigger than just compassion. Not that there's anything negative with compassion, of course. But people take scripture, and particularly some of the parables, and they twist it and manoeuvre it to suit their own needs, which is really not a good thing to do. It's not a smart thing to do. It's not a healthy thing to do. I recall back in the 80s, Margaret Thatcher. Some of you will have known of Margaret Thatcher in England. Margaret Thatcher took this parable and she used it to justify consumerism and capitalism in Western society. She used it also to say to people that the only reason that the Samaritan who was able to do this in compassion for this man who was beaten is because he had a job and he worked and he saved his money, which is a very awful way. It's also extremely shallow to look at that, this gospel in that light. But we do see sometimes only what we want to see. And we can, a bit like statistics, use the gospels to manipulate any position that we want to hold. But that is so far from what Jesus was aiming at when he was talking to the lawyer, who was the first person in the parable. And the lawyer, of course, I don't need to interpret that for you, what his role in society is. Jesus, I don't need to tell you what his role is. Next, you've got a man who is going from Jerusalem down to Jericho. So if he's going from Jerusalem to Jericho, the chances are that he has just fulfilled his pilgrimage obligation to get to the temple in Jerusalem. He's returning home, we would suspect. And he's got to go through a very rough part of the countryside. It's very barren, winding roads. And of course, with the word brigands comes in there. And he was attacked. So there's the next lot of characters in the parable. So which always, of course, represents the bad guys, evil in the world. But we know nothing about the man who was attacked. We know that he was a man. We don't know whether he was a Samaritan or we don't know whether he was a Jew. We know nothing about him. We do know that when he was attacked, they took everything from him. And he was beaten, we're told, half to death. So he wouldn't have been able to speak and he had nothing left, probably just his bare garments. So he had no identity. Keep that in mind, because then this lawyer is going to introduce the word neighbour and connect neighbour with identity, all right, if you're with me there. So this fellow has no identity, he has nothing, only just hanging on to his life. He cannot speak, he has no clothes. The clothes and the language are what identify a person's status in Jesus' time, and it also identifies where they come from. So he'd lost all of that. Next we have, of course, the priest who comes down the same way. So we would presume, in terms of the parable, that the priest has also been to Jerusalem to fulfil his annual role, his priestly role. Then we have the Levite, who, like the priest, passed over to the other side of the road, but he came a little closer. And the role of the Levite, through the tribe of Levi, is they were functionaries within the temple, so very much supporting the priest, but they were the ones that poured the water and the oil over the sacrifices before they were burned. So his role, the Levite's role, is in a modern example would be something like the marriage between a senior server or even an acolyte and a deacon. It was a liturgical role, and it also had a bit of a teaching role in it as well. So he had a lot to do, and this Levite would have been on a roster that would have brought him up to the temple to fulfil his role. And that's why Jesus, when the Samaritan comes by, we're told that the Samaritan, he's the only one that's really named, we know exactly who he is, the Samaritan, he pulls out water and oil and puts on the wounds. He pulls out the things that the Levite and the priest could have and should have done. So this Samaritan, Jesus is using him to go well beyond the cultural boundaries, beyond compassion. It's actually, I think, really more about mercy and about justice. Because the trouble with the priest and the Levite is that they didn't know whether the man was dead or alive. And if the priest and the Levite, particularly the priest, went to him within 2 metres, he was therefore defiled. He would have to go all the way back to Jerusalem and purify himself again if there was blood there, if he was a Samaritan, and if he was dead. So he would have been made, because that's what the law said. And that's why the lawyer is used in this case also, in this parable, because these lawyers and many of the people who were publicly seen to be practicing their faith, they stuck to the letter of the law, what we would call fundamental today. They stuck to the letter of the law. So this priest, rather than assist somebody who is injured, no matter who he is, we don't have any identity, rather than assist him, he's sticking to the letter of the law so that he remains undefiled. Now we would think, oh, that's crazy, but don't get too far ahead of ourselves in one sense, because many of us live our life by the so-called security of the letter of the law, particularly in the Catholic Church. People are more prepared a lot of the time to compromise the dignity of a suffering human being than what they are to compromise the letter, the absolute letter of the law, be it what we might say is the law of God, or even canon law at times. The point is that in this particular story, the priest and the Levite took God's law, the Mosaic law, and would not compromise it. And you think about it, there are times in our own life when the so-called law as we understand it, the law of God, there is times when that does get compromised. There are times when we have to go well beyond or take the tourist route to act in mercy and to act justly. And to some, it would appear that we are not acting in accordance with church law or Christian teaching. I'm not just going to pick on the Catholic Church, of course. And that's the case in this story. That's why I think Jesus uses it. It's much more, as I said, about mercy, and it's about justice. So look at it in terms of God is love. God gave us a law. Okay, we accept that. But if God is love, and we're told that all through the New Testament as well, that God is love, then it means that the love of God and the way that we love is over and above, in one sense, the letter of the law, and it is really the flesh of the spirit of the law. We are God's love. we bring that or we don't bring that into our relationships and our life situations. So I think then that love must overshadow any letter of the law. That must be our starting place because God is love. We cannot compromise that in any way. How we exercise that love, well, that gets challenged. It's not easy, and that's a whole other parable. But I think the next part, or the bottom line as I progress down this path, is that it's not the question of who is my neighbour that the lawyer asks. I don't think that's our big issue, because that's just looking for an out so that we can be like the person who we see being beaten up by the side of the railway line or whatever, and we're the people that sit there and film it on our phones and then put it on a YouTube clip, but nobody goes in to assist the poor person. That's what we're talking about. Because we don't want to get involved. We don't know whether they're full of ice and they're going to turn around and stab us or shoot us. No, we don't know. But if God is love, what we try to do in love will go far beyond any crazy little thoughts that I might have invented in my head. So it's not who is my neighbour. I think the bottom line for us really is to decide to whom I must become a neighbour. What prejudices have I got to put aside? To whom must I become a neighbour? And as you answer that question, just keep in mind, God is love, mercy and justice.